hours of back and forth and shocking comments at public debate over Jacksonville's human rights ordinance. Florida's death penalty is ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, and a big Powerball winner hits the jackpot down in Melbourne. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9 on the radio, and now subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we've got the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Then later, don't miss it as Elton Rivas, the founder of OneSpark, joins the show with his take on being asked to resign from the crowdfunding organization. Plus, the art installation The Blue Trees comes to Jacksonville. We'll tell you about that and speak with one of the stars of 42nd Street in town this weekend only. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday. Time for our weekly roundtable here today. Fred Matthews of The Examiner. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Larry Hannon of the Florida Times Union.
Good to be here.
Claire Goforth, who writes for Florida Weekly, or Folio Weekly, rather.
Good
Florida
morning.
Weekly. There is no such publication. And John Burr, our own analyst for WJCT.
Good morning.
Lots of news to discuss from the legislative session kicking off this week in Tallahassee to the Supreme Court ruling the state's death penalty is, in fact, unconstitutional. We'll discuss all of that and more. But first this morning, hours of public comment Tuesday night at the Jacksonville City Council meeting over expanding this city's human rights ordinance to cover LGBT citizens. Now, what drew the most attention were the eyebrow-raising remarks of a man who says he's a self-confessed pedophile. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we begin the show with a look at where things stand on this issue. Will the city council vote on expanding the law, the anti-discrimination law, or will they decide in favor of a referendum? That means you, the voters, decide, and that could drag this out for months. Give us a call with your thoughts. What do you think should happen when it comes to the city's human rights ordinance? Should it go to you, the voters, or should the city council decide? Call us up. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. Hours of public comment Tuesday night at the city council meeting with people speaking either in favor of or in opposition to expanding Jacksonville's anti-discrimination law. And the piece of this that got the most attention was a man that spoke out and said that he used to molest children. Pedophiles are not homosexuals. Let's begin by pointing that out right off the bat.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's that. But it lends to the argument, it lends to the bathroom argument that many people want to put with this HRO. What happens when you go to the bathroom? What happens when you go to the restroom? What happens to your kids when they go to the restroom at school or the locker room? Who gets to hang out in there? That's what that argument leads to. And the pedophile argument, the pedophile show that was entertained by the city council just lends to that argument. Look, one of the things about legislation and arguing, if you have to stand and allow the debate to go on in public, this should have happened in committee, by the way. Not in front of full council. The committee that's entertaining this should have entertained this, not before the full council. But if you want to try to delay and kill a bill, this is one way to do it, by having all this sideshow activity going on.
Claire Goforth, there are two sponsors of voting on this through the legislative process. They are Tommy Hazzouri and Aaron Bowman. Meanwhile, Councilman Bill Gulliford and Doyle Carter want this to go to a referendum. We'll have to wait and see which side wins.
Yes, we will. And I have to respectfully disagree with you, Fred, although this does lead to the bathroom question. Other jurisdictions that have passed this legislation have not seen any increase in incidents in bathrooms involving pedophiles. And what is going on in bathrooms now? There's nothing to stop someone from walking into a bathroom and molesting a child. Other than the law, you know, the safety is the most important thing on everyone's mind. But the reality is that there is no increased incidence of bathroom molestation in the wake of HRO expansion.
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. What I'm suggesting to you is that the opponents of the bill use this type of activity to try to defeat it, to try to make sure it doesn't happen. I'm not saying that it's true. You're absolutely right. But this is the kind of thing that when you allow this, I mean, how many, 3 minutes? Did he get more than 3 minutes to do this?
No, he did not.
See?
Logically, though, because it doesn't lead to an increase in incidents, then they don't really have an argument to stand on.
Larry Hannon.
This issue reached circus status Tuesday night. I mean, it was just a disaster. And quite frankly, the mayor needs to come out and take a stance on this. You know, he hasn't taken a stance, and so this void is being filled by all sorts of crazy people. The simple fact is, if Curry comes out and supports an HRO, it will probably pass. If he comes out and says, I'm against it, it will probably fail. And, you know, to a certain extent, he runs the same risk Alvin Brown faced. Alvin Brown just wanted the issue to go away, and it eventually hurt him with his core supporters. You know, Curry's not taking a stance up till now is now leading to the circus atmosphere.
The rubber is going to meet the road very soon for the mayor, John Burr. He will have to go public with where he is on this pretty soon here.
And I agree with Larry. He should have already. You know, we've had the public hearings that he called. Certainly, he has enough information now to make state an opinion. And until he does, you know, it's kind of annoying. He's kind of sitting back like, you know, a Supreme Court judge just above the fray when he has really the power to end the fray.
I think right Curry now wanted to lead from behind. He was hoping that with these meetings that we would reach a point where the consensus was reached. It's not happening. I mean, he's going to have to take a stance, and there's no stance he can take that's going to please everyone. I mean, this is the first time in his mayorality that he's going to have to do something with angry black people.
This is a tough issue for a mayor who, Fred, as you've pointed out, has probably almost definitely has aspirations beyond mayor of Jacksonville. We are the largest major city in the country that has not resolved this issue. This is getting national attention. There's a lot of light and heat on the mayor right now to see where he goes with this.
Well, that's true. And that's what it's all about. He's just 6 months into his term. An easy thing would be to get rid of this early, because it won't affect you 3 years down the line, theoretically, if you get it done early. But the simple fact of the matter is, if you don't want to do it, you delay. The city council doesn't want to do it. The majority of people on the city council, they don't want to vote for the HRO. If they did, they would.
How do you know that?
Because they haven't. Because they aren't moving the legislation. They aren't moving the legislation. You got two parties moving. This argument here should have gone to committee. First thing, city council should have sent this to the committee. Hearings on this could have been held there. The same amount of attitude. You get a first line vote on either one of the bills going forward.
So you disagree with Equality Florida position that they have the votes to get this thing done?
They may have the votes today, but unless, as what Larry's indicating, if the mayor is going to continue to delay and delay, he's the leader. He's the titular leader of the party in this town and of the city. And unless he makes a declaration one way or the other, this thing is going to go on and on and on. He has to make a declaration, come on one side or the other. And the city council doesn't want to have to vote on this without the okay of the mayor's office, the lead. And who is leading? We have a majority party that doesn't want to vote for this HRO.
Let's go to your calls right now. Scott in Mayport. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I know you've had numerous shows about this HRO. But, again, would you review why this isn't a part of the national civil rights legislation? It's always been confusing to me. And the cynic in me says this has been left by the Democrats to remain a wedge issue at all the local levels. I don't understand. When they've had power, why haven't this all just been rolled into civil rights legislation? If someone would comment on that.
Thank you, Scott. Sure. Claire, go forth.
Yes, and that is an excellent point. The reason that this hasn't been added to the national legislation is because typically the government likes to let these issues play out in the local jurisdictions and move up to the states, just like gay marriage recently, when the Supreme Court found that it was the law of all of the land. That was the result of many years of incremental work on the local and state level to add that
Larry Hannett.
And, you know, Jacksonville is now lagging behind. There's a lot of cities that have passed things like this. You know, there's a reason why all of these Chamber of Commerce Republicans are pushing to pass this. It's not just the desire to do the right thing. It's the fear that they're not going to get businesses into town because businesses are going to be reluctant to show up here in a community that doesn't have an HRO protection.
John Burr.
And, you know, the whole argument about lagging behind and the advantage to business, that to a lot of people, that doesn't really cut any ice. I mean, you know, what this all says to me is, and we kind of tend to forget it, but how conservative a town Jacksonville is and how what a bedrock religious based voting block we have here. I mean, the conventional wisdom of the local politics is if you go against this, if you vote for an HRO, you don't have a political future in Jacksonville.
Now, let's talk about that because Bill Guilford wants this to go to a referendum in August, not November. In August, you theoretically would have more motivated primary voters come out, more conservative religious voters. In November, you'd have the entire electorate come out. Right. That would be the entire population who would be a much broader demographic base. Now, when UNF did a poll on this, they found that there is, in fact, John, bipartisan support to pass this across all parties, across all demographic groups and age categories, that it would pass if it went across all groups in the city. But if you've got a small segment of the population coming out to vote, that's a different story.
Right. You've got Ron Littlepage had a column in the TU. He pointed out that about 20% tend to vote in primaries. The last presidential election, we had 77% of registered voters voting. But I think another point is this shouldn't go to referendum because it's not the majority shouldn't be responsible for guaranteeing the civil rights of the minority. That's never been the way it works. That's why it should be the council that passes it rather than referendum, because if you're relying on the majority of people to say this minority has rights, it's never going to work well.
Catherine tweets the show saying it's called human rights. How can the city be against something which is offered for one human and not another? Let's go to Rick in Arlington. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. I was going to say some of the same comments. First of all, I think you're right about they're afraid to vote because they're afraid they're going to lose their political jobs. Second of all, if it goes out to vote to the public, the churches are going to turn out their flock to vote against this. There'll be such a big campaign. And we're right. We're not only in the belt. We are the buckle of the ultra-conservative church-going people that are afraid of their own shadow a lot of times. I think the new mayor is so tied up with his political monies with the conservative churches that he won't do anything about it. He doesn't have the leadership. Neither does the council have the leadership because they're afraid of their political jobs. Unfortunately for Jacksonville, this is the way it's going to be for a while. And it's probably going to get worse coming the new elections. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Let's go to Beth along Atlantic Boulevard. Hi, Beth.
Good morning. I wanted to kind of go back to the pedophile the self-admitted pedophile at that town forum meeting. I mean, what was done to validate or check into his claims and what he was talking about and the children he molested? I'm more concerned about that gentleman entering the bathroom, that my son is using. And then going back to Catherine's tweet, human, that's the first word in the HRO, human rights, all humans across the board. I mean, this is a no-brainer. Everybody should be treated equal and have the fair rights to live their life the way that they want to. So that was my comment, and I just wondered if anyone knew what was being done for that self-admitted pedophile.
Thanks, Beth. Let's talk about that for just a moment. The gentleman that spoke.
He does have a police record. He's out right now. I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what crimes he's been charged with in the past, but if for people who are opposed to the HRO, and really for anyone who's pushing a political agenda, you kind of need to keep your own nuts under control, and this is not the guy you want to be the face of your movement, and you know, they've had quite a few people who, quite frankly, are not very respectable going up and speaking there.
Fred Matthews, on the other hand, we saw in the city of Houston a very effective campaign mobilized against what was dubbed the bathroom bill. It was an expansion of the human rights ordinance, and it went down to defeat over these same types of issues.
Yeah, and in that city, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the mayor of that city is gay.
She is. Yeah. She is.
So I think that's what you risk. That's what the folks that are supporting this ordinance risk if it can go to an ordinance. And keep in mind, this is a presidential election year. You've got the primary. Assuming that it goes on the general election ballot, how far down the ballot is this referendum going to be? If people even decide that even though we'll have a high number of votes on the presidential end, when you get down to the end of that ballot, vote on referendums, the percentage of people who vote on that will be almost down. So it comes out to those who are really for or against to vote for this thing. Look, again, the same thing. And I just hold to this. The longer this goes on without the mayor making a position, the more we can see it going to the ballot. The city council is just inclined to send it to the ballot rather than take a vote on it.
Larry is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. What do you think?
I'd like to just make two points. First point is you had a call a while ago talking about it. Aren't these laws already covering this issue? Then if the laws, for that argument is so weak, because if they're already covering the issue, then what harm is it to pass this law? Now, the other point I want to make is a lot of these conservative churches are against this, and they were the same church 60 years ago were against blacks and whites marrying, and they had scriptures to tell us why it shouldn't happen. And, you know, it's time for us to move on here and grow up, okay? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. We're going to move on to and talk about some of the other news of the week, because we talked about this for quite some time. The number to join the show is 549-2937. And also making headlines this week, Floridians, prepare yourselves. The lawmakers are back in session. Tuesday began the annual 60-day legislative session in Tallahassee. State representatives and senators are constitutionally obligated to do just one thing when they meet in the state capitol: pass a budget. The question, can they actually do it this time? Claire Goforth, we can only hope that they can accomplish this one task, because they failed to do so last time around more than once. Let's hope.
Yes, let us hope. There's a lot of issues that are coming before the Florida legislature that are of interest this year. The one that I'm particularly going to be following are two provisions, one that would have the effect of closing half of the state's abortion providers. I know that the Supreme Court is deciding the Texas laws that closed half of that state's this session, but if the Supreme Court finds that those don't hold, given an unreasonable burden on a woman's access to abortion, these laws may go forward in Florida. And it's worth noting that one of them was co-sponsored by our very own Representatives Van Zant and Jay Fant, that the one that would require doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of their office. Now, the American Medical Association and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists don't agree that that is a necessary provision.
Okay. There are some other ones also being looked at. There could be an open carry provision passed this session, Larry Hannon.
Yes, that's going to be a big deal. And of course, if I may jump ahead to the next topic briefly, they're also going to have to amend the state's death penalty sentencing laws within a surprise the U.S. Supreme Court gave them earlier this week. And I think that's something they have to do, because we basically have no death penalty procedures now. And we've got five death penalty trials here in Jacksonville scheduled to go by April 5th. So
yeah,
you know, there's a lot they have to do.
We'll talk about that as well. Fred, education may get a close look in the upcoming legislative session, because the state's testing and accountability system has been coming under increasing scrutiny. And combat veterans may get more support. Texting while driving will go from a secondary to a primary offense under a Senate bill that's being moved through the process. Body cameras for law enforcement officers, that could get passed, and a number of other measures. But You know, with redistricting also coming through, the balance of power in Tallahassee is something that also we need to keep our eyes on. In particular, the Senate, the state Senate, John Burke.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues, as there are every year. But, you know, the one issue that we haven't talked about and hasn't been mentioned much is the Medicaid expansion. You know, I remember last year at this time when we were talking about, hey, what's coming up in the legislative session, you know, everybody was saying, oh, well, that, you know, that just doesn't have a chance. It's not going to be an issue, blah, blah, blah. And that seems to be the wisdom right now is that, you know, Medicaid expansion is a done deal and it's off the table. But there's just too much money there. We've got a national presidential campaign where Obamacare is going to be a huge issue, whether to keep it or let it go. There are going to be campaigns riding on that issue. And I just can't believe that, given the importance, that this issue in Florida is all sewn up. Louisiana just voted to expand their Medicaid.
Well, with the break that the administration gave Florida last year, essentially, had the effect of tampering this down for this legislative session. We're just not going to see anything else happen with that until after the next presidential election, and you know, sort of following the lead of Congress, if they can, the National Congress, if they can come up with a bill that will give them an alternative to Obamacare versus just being opposed to it, that will give the states like Florida who don't want to participate in this Medicaid expansion because of that an opportunity to then pass something.
But the loathing right now in Tallahassee between the House and the Senate, even between individual members of both bodies, is as high as I can ever remember it being. That's going to make it very hard to get things done. I mean, we've got this redistricting where you're going to have a lot of members running against each other, and suddenly the Democrats have an outside shot to retake the Senate, which is hard to believe. But there's a very good chance we're going to see chaos in Tallahassee.
Let's go to Scott in Orange Park. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
Great, thanks.
Every topic that you're on that requires votes goes to the heart of whether or not somebody is conservative and they usually go hand in hand, and very regressive, or if they have a liberal mind or a reasonable mind where they would like the idea of having discourse. I think our country has become so disconnected from the root of where we started, from the principles of Locke, from everything that happened. I went through Colonial Williamsburg in D.C. earlier this year. I went to the Carter Center earlier this year.
Scott, what's your point? Sorry to cut you off. We're just short on time.
It's everything with the HR, like with the HRO, when there's people out there and forces out there who are trying to impose their will upon a general populace. They're taking away the basic American tenet that we supposedly cherish in America, which is personal liberty and freedom. They wave a flag to do this. Until those people are, you know, until education gets better and maybe they develop a conscience, it's always going to remain the same. This is the same story you find in any country, anywhere you go, when you have regressive people who look to religion instead of the greater ideologies.
All right. Thanks, Scott. John.
Well, you know, just by framing the argument that way, and I don't mean to criticize the caller because a lot of people express the same thing, but just by framing the argument that way, conservative equals regressive, that in itself engenders a lot of animosity, and that leads to contributes to the polarization of these issues that we're all talking about. I mean, you know, if you want to open your mind. Conservative is not necessarily regressive.
It isn't, but the caller does have a point in that the parties themselves have allowed the issue. They're just so divisive. They're divided on issues merely for the sake of argument.
And no one wants to find common ground right now. Everyone is sort of locked in on their own ideological desire. And, you know, being willing to cut a deal is not something that benefits most politicians now. It hurts them.
Well, in a rare 8-1 ruling this week, we did see the Supreme Court all on the same page. This was really striking. Florida's death penalty fell under a cloud of uncertainty Wednesday, Larry, as you pointed out, as the high court struck down our state's sentencing system as unconstitutional, an 8-1 decision. Chaos now in Florida on a number of death penalty cases, including several high-profile cases right here in Jacksonville. The high court saying that, and it's a complicated decision, but it has to do with the role of the jury in Florida death penalty cases.
Correct. What happened was back in 2002, the Supreme Court issued a ruling in Arizona saying the jury has to mandate death. The judge can't make the final decision. Since then, Florida has only had the jury do an advisory role. They've insisted that they're following the Constitution. The Supreme Court finally said this week, no, you're not. This violates the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution. Legal scholars have been saying this for years. Even the Florida Supreme Court a few years ago told the legislature, you really need to change this. And the legislature ignored them until this week. And so now we have this chaos.
Yeah, Fred Matthews, Claire Goforth, John Burr, we will continue to watch and see how that affects several cases, including the case of Donald Smith, the man convicted of killing the little girl in Jacksonville, Cherish Periwinkle.
Right.
Quick call, James on the north side. Go ahead, James.
Yes, I got a question for you. I've been watching the news, and I see these open carry laws, and I see these guys walking around in these other states. Well, they walk around with AK-47s and AR-15s, and they're walking in and out of grocery stores and Walmarts and stuff like that.
It'll be like the old West. Yeah. It?
Right. In Texas, they passed an open carry law, Claire, and I saw pictures of it. Folks coming into stores carrying AK-47s and such.
Yeah, that's
I don't know that the law would apply that way in Florida, though.
It may not, but that's a dangerous law in Florida, particularly if you're a minority. I mean, you know, I don't think that this is going to make it easier for police to determine who is a criminal and who is just doing open carry, but I really don't want to leave it in their discretion given the shootings.
That's crazy stuff.
Well, it actually won't be a bad bill for minorities because those of us who have who can get the license and get the conceal will simply walk through Publix showing our weapon like everybody else. It could be one that could actually stop a lot of arguments because you got to determine if you're going to be a faster draw than he is.
Would you walk down Bay Street?
I would walk down Bay Street if they allowed me to do it with my Glock on my hip because the law allows it. We have that. The problem, that's one of the reasons why the law stopped it. That's one reason why it was stopped, because certain people who had guns, we didn't want them to have a gun.
We stopped
them from carrying
that's
a
not
gun.
My concern.
Fred, I just got to believe that a black man walking down Bay Street showing a gun is not a good thing in Jacksonville, Florida.
There is no way this can go bad. I can't think of a single bad possibility.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to segue to a lighter note right now and talk about the power Powerball jackpot.
I don't want to talk about that.
Which none of us won, sadly. But, did you hear down at the Publix A1A in Melbourne, there was a big winner. And there were several winners in Florida of that record Powerball jackpot. We wanted to make quick mention of that. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Oh, there we go. Only in Florida do men list their fantasy football experience as qualification for leading an NFL team. Yes, the current vacancy as head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers has attracted a lot of interest. This after Lovie Smith was shown the door. In fact, one of the applicants is Florida man Andrew Forgino of Titusville. The Marine veteran listed his aviation and combat experience as worthy attributes on his application to the Bucs. And he says his expertise at fantasy football includes managing a successful lineup and hounding the waiver wires. I don't even know what that means.
Did he win his league this year, though?
Forgino also plays Madden Online, which he listed on his resume. So when is he going to be formally introduced as the next head coach? They never called, his wife
Too
says.
Late.
Imagine that.
She wrote about it for Florida Today. I tend to think of her as his long-suffering wife, but...
football widow.
Yes. Okay, and we talked about the Powerball. Only in Florida do people pool together $146,000 to spend on the record Powerball jackpot and walk away with nothing. Now, somebody did win down in Melbourne, as we discussed, but unfortunately over in Tampa... Get this, some 270 participants managed to put together a six-figure pool, thinking that would increase their chances of winning some of that jackpot. But no dice. Oh, Bubkiss.
Only
nothing.
One ticket.
Nada. Yeah,
they probably shouldn't have gotten the same ticket each time.
Thank you, Larry Hannon, Claire Goforth, John Burr, and Fred Matthews, guys. And Claire, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
Greetings and a happy new year to all.
Join us Saturday for Swamp Radio's New Year's celebration, recorded live at the Florida Theater, featuring songs, stories, sketches, and conversations which celebrate Northeast Florida's arts and culture scene. Swamp Radio, Saturday at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Michael Feldman, and thanks to WJCT and the Florida Theater, What Do You Know, Y'all? Is coming to Jacksonville on Saturday, February 20th. We're flying down to check out all 22 miles of beach, maybe do us some fish camping. Join us, won't you? Tickets are available at the Florida Theater box office, by phone at 904-355-2787, or online at floridatheater.com. We'll see you there.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
In Iowa, Republicans are expecting a lot more people to turn out for the caucuses on February 1st.
Some are saying 15% higher, some are saying 30% higher, but we're estimating somewhere between 20 and 25% higher turnout than in 2012.
One reason for the big expected turnout? The unusual Iowa campaign of Donald Trump. Robert Siegel reports from Western Iowa later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's One Spark crowdfunding concern made headlines this week and caused quite a stir after founder Elton Rivas was asked to step down. Rivas is out the door along with several staffers and board member Rena Coughlin. She also handed in her resignation. Financial backer Peter Rummel says the organization is rebooting and looking at changing from a week-long crowdfunding festival to a year-round effort that would connect creators with venture capital. That means the big downtown festival scheduled for this April may or may not happen this spring. So how did all this shake out, and where do things go from here? Well, Elton Rivas is on the line now with his thoughts about leaving OneSpark and his own future plans. Elton Rivas, thanks for calling into the show.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
And you can get on the line with your thoughts about OneSpark at 549-2937. So you were asked to resign after a final meeting with the board. Can you tell us a little bit more about the chain of events leading up to that?
Yeah, sure. And I'd say, and as Peter has said publicly afterwards, you know, it's mutual with the new direction of the company, and for myself personally, being a newlywed here of a couple of months, it was a good time for me to transition out and to allow the company to go in a new direction and personally just take some time before diving into whatever the next venture may be.
Peter Rummel, the main financial patron of OneSpark, it never turned a profit. He provided at least half of the $6 million kitty that put on this incredible festival. And he had become increasingly vocal about the need for OneSpark to become at least break even. Was he critical of the finances with you personally? Was that the deciding factor?
No, and for any deciding factor of things, like we said, I mean, I think from my perspective, it was mutual. I mean, on Thursday, I had shared a memo with the board talking about a plan of action, you know, from my perspective going forward. And then Friday, I met with Peter and another board member, and there was a mutual acknowledgement that we just weren't in alignment. And it was just a good, apparent time for us to go in different directions. And then, you know, after consideration, I felt it was necessary to transition out from all my different roles. You know, there was a conversation about staying on in the board capacity to help through transition. But it just seemed like a good thing to do to be able to be free and clear and to allow the organization to just run forward full speed in the direction and give it a really good chance at success.
How do you feel that your vision differs from his and the board members?
I think, you know, as it relates to the direction moving forward, again, I mean, I don't think there was a huge, you know, difference in vision. I mean, I think ultimately the core of what OneSpark is remains the same as the team has talked about, you know, in some of their recent things, which is really about connecting great ideas now, especially with capital. And so, you know, I think that direction makes a lot of sense. And again, from my perspective, it was just a good time to kind of transition out and move on. And absolutely grateful and thankful for, you know, everything that we've been able to build over the years. And, you know, extremely proud of the fact that there's so many passionate, creative, and, you know, extremely talented people in our community, all the creators and volunteers and sponsors and stakeholders, and especially, you know, past and present employees. And they really deserve all the credit for bringing OneSpark to life.
You came up with this idea, you and the two original guys, Dennis Eusebio and Varick Rosetta. None of you are now affiliated with OneSpark. This new special purpose corporation, OneSpark Ventures, which Mr. Rummel announced earlier in the week, they now own the intellectual property of OneSpark. You didn't even receive any severance, did you? So you came up with this idea of OneSpark. You launched it. You got it going. And now you're out, and you don't even own the intellectual property. What's that? I would think that has to be a bitter pill to swallow, Elton.
No, you know, something I recently read, I think rings very true, and it's truly, it's just important to remember that a leader in any capacity really just serves as a privilege and not as a divine right. You know, I think there's probably thousands of other people that are more deserving of the position of leading the creation of a massive crowdfunding festival in a city like Jacksonville. But, you know, somehow, and the way I look at it, in God's irony, I've been allowed to serve as a leader, and just am deeply thankful for that experience, and especially the grace and support that the community has shown through that period of time. You know, that's really why I think a lot of entrepreneurs, and, you know, I'm here in Tallahassee, had a conversation with a bunch of entrepreneurs yesterday, why entrepreneurs do what they do. There's a burning passion to create something. And, you know, that piece of the puzzle for me is extremely fulfilling.
What are your thoughts about the news that we got this week that there may not even be a festival this spring?
Well, I mean, for our community, I certainly hope that OneSpark continues. You know, especially that key mission of supporting people of all kinds to help them move their ideas forward. And I think especially in cities like Jacksonville, there's just a huge need for platforms like OneSpark in our community and in many around the world to nurture early stage ideas, to give people a pathway to connect with, you know, other people especially, and then ultimately for companies, a need to connect with capital. So I certainly hope that it continues to thrive in our community. And I think that, you know, there's a great leadership team that's in place that will help to make that happen.
Now, the founders of the downtown group, The Elbow, have said that they're going to have some sort of event April 7th through 9th. Those are the dates that the OneSpark event would theoretically take place. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I saw briefly the article in Transit yesterday, and, you know, I think the Elbow Group has done a lot over the years, and they've got a really good organized team of people that are there. You know, they, I think, originally were actually a OneSpark creator in times past and have kind of grown from that, so it's a good example of what can happen. I don't know intimately the details of their plans, but, you know, I would definitely support any sort of initiative that is trying to create something to continue the momentum that has been built over the past few years.
And now, Elton, you're still so young. You're just 35 years old, newly married. What's next for you?
Yeah, I don't feel young. I lost a lot of hair over the past few years through, you know, kind of building all these different things. My wife and I had talked about it, and, you know, we had talked about it for some time, and the decision is to not commit to anything for the immediate future. But I've had some conversations with folks that have reached out and been, you know, very gracious and somewhat excited that I was available to do work. So I'll probably look at a couple different projects. I've always had a dream to write a book, so maybe this will be a good period of time to put some thoughts on paper, but not going to commit to anything for the next week or two for sure.
Let's go to Lori on the west side. Lori, you're on the air with Elton Rivas. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hi. I was just hoping you could enumerate the litany of reasons that they gave you to help you make up your mind, so to speak. Thank you.
Sure. I won't go into any sort of confidential conversation details out of respect for, you know, everybody and for the organization moving forward. But again, I think it was a good time to transition. And, you know, I'm excited for them and for the future of the company.
Well, Elton Rivas, we appreciate you calling into the show. Best of luck. And thanks for being with us.
For sure. Thank you.
Elton Rivas, one of the founders of OneSpark. It is now in the new OneSpark Ventures, a special purpose corporation rebooting. We will keep our eyes on whether the festival happens in April. And in a moment, one of the stars of the classic Broadway production, 42nd Street. Plus, we've got to look at the compelling new outdoor art installation, The Blue Trees. That's next.
When a baby enters the world, it's greeted by a welcoming committee of bacteria. I'm Manoush Samarodi. Join me on Science Friday for a look at the microbiome of babies. Plus, engineers have cooked up a new recipe for making concrete on Mars. That's on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
The Florida Legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida public radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
If I were a rich man,
Fiddler on the Roof is back on Broadway in a new revival. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview from our archive with the show's songwriters, Sheldon Harnick and Jerry Bock. And we'll hear a song or two that was written for the show but never used. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's the quintessential backstage musical comedy classic, 42nd Street, the song and dance fable of Broadway, with such hits as Shuffle Off to Buffalo and We're in the Money. It tells the story of a starry-eyed dancer named Peggy Sawyer who seeks stardom on the Great White Way. 42nd Street on stage now at the Times Union Center. Actress Caitlin Ellinger plays the lead role of Peggy. She told me a little bit about this classic production. Nice to have you on the show. Lots of excitement. This is such a Broadway classic. What's it like to land this part?
It's pretty surreal. It's amazing to have this opportunity and this experience.
What's it been like touring the country, too? Because this is a show that's familiar to generations of theater goers, so it's a familiar production. But even with that, I think people are still so excited to see it.
Absolutely. It's been amazing to bring the show to so many different audiences and to see how many people enjoy it across America. So,
how challenging are some of these musical numbers and dance numbers? The dancing's incredible.
It's very athletic, and sometimes you just want to gasp for air. It's hard, but it's so energetic, and it's fun and exciting that you really enjoy yourself out there.
Had you done anything this challenging before?
No, I hadn't.
Really?
It's my first professional job.
Yeah. This is your first job?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I graduated from high school last year. So.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow, you're really on your way, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow, how exciting. So it's a little cold in Jacksonville right now, so I'm sorry we don't have Florida weather for you.
No, it's all right. It's nice. We were just in West Palm Beach, Florida. It was humid, so.
Okay, so this is a good change.
It is.
How's the reaction been, the audiences at the Times Union Center?
It's been amazing. We had a great audience last night, and it's a beautiful theater, so we're thankful to be here for a week.
So. Excellent. So it's 42nd Street on stage now at the Times Union Center. Get your tickets at artistseriesjax.org. Get your tickets now. That show closes Sunday. And finally this hour, internationally renowned artist Constantine Demopoulos is bringing his social and environmental art installation, The Blue Trees, to Jacksonville. It's part of a worldwide conversation about deforestation and its global impact. Greenscape of Jacksonville has invited the artist to recreate this project. It's been hosted in cities around the world. And in addition to raising awareness about the importance of a healthy tree canopy, The Blue Trees engages the public in this public art installation. You can check it out beginning tomorrow. Constantine Demopoulos joins us now in studio, along with Greenscape of Jacksonville Executive Director Anna Dooley. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, morning. Melissa.
Good to have you both. This sounds incredible. Constantine Demopoulos, a pleasure. Describe this for us because it sounds absolutely fascinating.
Well, I guess it's using art and color to try to change the environment in a very short period of time and make, I guess, the trees stand out and highlight them rather than them sitting in the backdrop, actually become the primary players in your view. So visually it becomes much more relevant and people stop and look at the trees, and then often it's to get people to ask, why are the trees blue? And once they ask that question, then we can go into much more of the detail.
Sure. So beginning tomorrow, Anna, people will visit Hemming Park and 40 small trees will be turned blue. And that will just be the kickoff event, right?
That's the kickoff event. Actually, we've upped the number to 50
okay.
small trees because they have to have a certain smooth bark in order to absorb the coloring. And then those trees will be relocated after the event in several weeks or months to other sites for planting.
And you've staged this all over the world, London, Singapore, many other places. What's the impact been?
Well, like any public art, it really is about getting your the vision out there and getting people to be aware of it. I think public art allows it's outside, so it actually allows people to come and participate in it. We've had from 92-year-olds to 5-year-olds come and look at trees. And part of it is that, I think the public art allows people to kind of bring themselves into it and look at the way and also participate, almost become artists in themselves.
The issue you're trying to raise awareness about is global deforestation.
Absolutely. I mean, people... It's actually a very silent cancer in some ways. And in 2003, when I started to do some work for Friends of the Earth, you know, we were told that 30% of the old growth forests was left in the world. And the statistic says that 50 football fields per minute destroyed of old growth forests. And basically these old growth forests are what allows us to breathe. And once they disappear, then all other issues are going to be incidental. And so although I'm a social and environmental artist, then I do a lot of other work, like in the field of homelessness and a variety of other... The most important part is us breathing. And so once the trees go, then there will be no issues. And what Anna and her... people do is actually highlight that and bring trees into the city, into Jacksonville. And they are very important. You know, psychologically, remove the trees and you will have issues.
In fact, Greenscape has added more than 300,000 trees
Incredible. To
this area's tree canopy. Jacksonville has one of the loveliest tree canopies of any city anywhere, in part because of Greenscape.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm delighted to be a part of the organization. The organization's been around for 40 years, and we stay continuously busy, not only with planting trees and caring for them and advocating for them. This particular event, I saw the blue trees myself personally in Sacramento and was stopped dead in my tracks. Mm-hmm. And I've been working ever since then to bring them here. And as a result of some generous grants from the Cultural Council, which was funded by Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then Wells Fargo, and the Late Bloomers Garden Club, we're able to have Con here.
And by the way, why blue?
I guess because there are no blue trees. Blue trees don't exist.
Yeah.
And so it kind of brings that aspect forward. Also, I think that part of it is that about breathlessness, and we're born blue, and so, yeah, and that idea of breathing is, you know, when you go blue because you can't breathe, and when we're born, the doctor hits you, and then the blood comes through. So the idea is trying to subtly put things into people's minds, and so the blue is also, it's quite an electric blue, and in fact, when you go onto the website and see the blue trees, people often think we've photoshopped them, but in fact, it is an incredible blue. It's like no other blue that you've seen. It's quite electric.
People can see this beginning tomorrow at 10:30 at Hemming Park, but that will just be the first opportunity.
Well, they can not only see it, they can actually apply the blue coloring
to some trees. They can paint
tomorrow.
The trees.
Yes, it'll be our first installation, and then we have three others following, and you can go to our website and learn more about them. But we invite people to come down, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It really is. This is a renowned worldwide temporary art installation coming to Jacksonville beginning tomorrow morning, The Blue Trees. Artist Constantine Demopoulos and Anna Dooley, who heads Greenscape of Jacksonville. Again, this kicks off at 10:30 tomorrow in downtown Hemming Park. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening. Our producer is Sean Birch, and our show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. Never miss a program. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We're taking a day off Monday for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, but we'll be right back here Tuesday at 9 a.m. So have a safe and happy holiday weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.